Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Fitness Solution. And what an episode have we got lined up for you. Today, I jumped on the phone with Sarah Duff, or you might know her as Thrive with Duff, as she is all over Instagram. Like a lot of these people I get to talk to, it's a very fun job I get to do. And we talk about all things health and fitness, as you'd expect on The Fitness Solution, and Sarah's take on, well, her journey and Sarah's take on what she's been through and how she lets that inform what others do is really interesting, and how she's evolved. And we talk a lot about evolving and change and how that's going to affect you in the future. So you know what, you know me, I always talk about allowing your past to inform your future. And we really take that strand of fitness forward and talk about it a lot. And it's a really exciting episode. I can't wait for you to listen to it. That being said, if you do enjoy The Fitness Solution, please don't forget to rate and review on the Apple Store, as all my reviews, all my ratings really help push the podcast up the charts so that more people can see it, more people can find it. And then hopefully we can help more people as part of our little Fitness Solution community. Also, if you want to join The Fitness Collective, which is my coaching group, then you're more than welcome. Just head to www.thegymstarter.com and make sure that you just follow the links on there on how to sign up. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. And I really hope you enjoyed this episode. Let's hand over to Sarah now. Welcome to the Fitness Solution podcast. And on today's episode, I've got the amazing Sarah Duff. She's absolutely wonderful. If you follow her on Instagram, then you already know how wonderful she is. If you don't, then go and follow her on Instagram, and I'm sure we'll get to the knob of that as we get into the conversation. But let's just get to it. Sarah, say hey.
Well, hello, good morning, and thank you so much for having me on and for the lovely introduction. I thoroughly appreciate it. I always find it very amusing when I hear my full name for some reason. I don't know. It's just a thing. When somebody says Sarah Duff, I'm like, oh my God, I'm back at school. I'm scared. I don't know. I don't like this. So. But it's my pleasure to be here in the company of your fine self. So thank you for having me on.
My absolute pleasure, and thank you for letting me enjoy the company. It's great. I love your Insta handle, Thrive with Duff. Thrive is such an underutilized word. How on earth did you come up with that? Like, where does that come from?
Oh my God. So strangely enough, my Instagram handle has only, or my whole kind of my business and my brand has really only become Thrive with Duff in the last 6 months. I've had big transitions in kind of where I started when I first came into the health and fitness industry, and where I am now and how I work with clients and what I work with them on has changed and shifted so much. So my Instagram handle for a very long time and the name of my brand was Sarah Duff Lifestyle and Fitness, which was like 1,000 letters long, and it was a real mouthful and it wasn't catchy. And it just, as time has gone on, it just doesn't reflect what I work on with people on. It doesn't reflect my brand, because I'm not really so much about the fitness or that kind of side of thing, which is what I originally started coaching people on. It is now literally about helping and empowering women to start thriving in their lives. And it kind of came from my own journey, because I, for a very long time, was not thriving. And it's only been in the last couple of years, having done so much of my kind of own inner work, that I have started to actually thrive in my own life. So that's kind of where it came from. And just the way it rolls off the tongue, Thrive, I just love it.
As you know, I'm an actor, as we were discussing off air. And it's just one of those words that you can really get into. It's great. I love it. It's a lot like, there's two other words that do it. One which I will not say, because it's an awful swear word. And one that I don't want Apple to ban me. No. Although they haven't banned James Smith for saying it 1,000 times, so I'm sure I could get away with it, but I won't. And the other one is nourish. Like, I talk to my clients about, you know, eat food that nourishes you, that really, like, and that, and nourishment can be anything, but it's such a meaty word you can really get your mouth into, and it, and when you do it, when you talk about it like that, it naturally conjures up images of what nourishing food looks like, and that could be like a chocolate donut if you really need it at that moment, right? Yeah. But it can also be an apple, like an apple, when you crunch an apple, it's nourishing you as you eat it. And yeah, so thrive is one of those words. It has such longevity to it that gives you energy when you say it. I adore it. It's so cool.
100%. Yeah, nourishment is another one. So I'm very into attuned with my own body. And so when I hear words, there are certain words that I get a kind of visceral response to. And nourishment is, whenever I hear the word nourishment, it kind of, it's almost like an internal hug.
Right. Yeah.
Same with kind of thrive. It just makes me, it makes me kind of want to leap up in the air, or like it kind of sends a really positive energy right the way through me. And I'm just like, oh yeah, that's good. And that's kind of, you know, this is what we're trying to help our clients, you know, do, is to internally hook themselves and internally, like, be able to dance through life. So that's kind of what it's all about.
Yeah. To that point, I came across an amazing quote a little while ago. I was writing a manual for the fitness collective. And on it, I found this quote, and it was, empathy is like giving someone a psychological hug.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's exactly what it's about. It's about getting people to have empathy for themselves. That's pretty much all I think anyone in this industry should really try and do. So when did you come into the health and fitness industry? Like, what, to talk us through that whole growth and that whole change and like the history of it all, really.
Yeah. So I didn't actually enter into the health and fitness space until about six and a half years ago. Previous to that, I had a 14 year career as a air hostess, flight attendant.
Wow.
Yeah, man. That was supposed to be a 6 month, when I left uni, I was supposed to just go and like get some work experience, customer service, in the airline industry, and just kind of got sucked into the vortex of that lifestyle. And then became more gradually over the years, fell more and more out of love with it. And I was struggling with drugs and alcohol and all kinds of things going on. And I then became more scared about leaving a job that I disliked so much, because it was the uncertainty of knowing, well, what the hell do I want to do? And then I had a friend who trained as a personal trainer, and she kind of inspired me really to start considering that might be something I would want to do. So I left my job, retrained as a personal trainer, and that's kind of where I started. As soon as I entered into the health and fitness industry, like literally on the first day of my first personal training job, I decided that I needed to enter a fitness modeling competition. I was already kind of discovered weight training and kind of was in the kind of, you know, fitness model bodybuilding space anyway. And I very blindly made this decision. I had no idea like what the process was going to be. I will put my hands up and say I did not do any research. I just thought, I'd seen kind of, you know, other people in the fitness industry, and they all seemed to be walking around with these weird pro card things and seemed to be saying they were making loads of money from deals. And there was a real story in my head that in order for me to be successful and help people, I for some reason had to, you know, do this as a thing to show how dedicated I was to, you know, fitness and all of the things. So I did a 20-week prep, and that 20 weeks I think was probably one of the biggest learning experiences of my life. It was just brutal, and at the end of it I came out of it with a very an even bigger disordered relationship with self and an even bigger disordered relationship with food. So the years subsequently to that was a lot of trying to maintain very low body, you know, low levels of body fat, because my whole self-worth and my whole identity was attached to this. And I didn't know who I was. I was miserable. I was binge eating. I was, you know, then not eating. I mean, it was a whole, can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah, fuck it.
Well, it was a whole shit show of just internal dissatisfaction and internal misery. I was overtraining. I'd kind of gone from using alcohol really as a coping mechanism from stuff into, I then threw myself into obsessively training and, you know, the whole food thing. So I kind of just transferred one unhealthy habit into another as a way of numbing out emotions and dealing with kind of my own internal unhappiness. And yeah, I mean, from there, it has taken me, so up until a couple of years ago, really, to sort out my relationship with food and to really start understanding what was going on in my internal world, and what, you know, why I was feeling so happy, why I wasn't getting the results in my life that I wanted. And basically, you know, I began to realize that my external world was a direct reflection of what was going on in my internal world. And in my internal world, I had very low self-esteem. I had a lot of kind of undealt with crap from, you know, as a lot of us have, from various things that had happened over my life. There was, you know, limiting beliefs. There was all sorts of things going on that up until a few years ago, I really was, you know, I didn't realize. And so that's kind of where this whole kind of transition then for my my brand and my business started, because, you know, I'd come into this and was coaching people specifically on, you know, fat loss, weight training and nutrition. And essentially I was just like, okay, as time has gone on, I've realized that people actually, yes, they need all of that, but unless you have the internal bit of you, your internal world sorted, and you understand what is going on, you will probably never generate the results that you truly want, because, you know, your internal world directly, you know, forms your external world. So if you're struggling with weight loss and you're struggling to find fulfillment and happiness and, you know, meaning to life and all of that, then you have to turn inwards and start looking at, you know, what is going on inside. What are you not being real with yourself about? What are you still in denial about? I think there's a lot of people hiding behind shame because they don't want to say, I'm not happy, or, you know, I'm struggling with this, or shame will be the thing. I compare shame to Madame Whiplash, because as long as shame is there and you are not saying your truth, you are not speaking your reality, you're not being honest with yourself, you will always be hiding, you'll always have Madam Shame in the way, and you will never be able to get into the real crux of, you know, what is going on with you, what really needs dealing with, you know, what is it that keeps making you sabotage your results. So that is kind of, I now coach women on building relationship with self, in short, so, you know, uncovering the blocks and then rebuilding their self-esteem, so that all the other relationships in their life, whether it be food or alcohol or people, they will then become healthier as a result of an improved relationship with self, because we are the foundation of our world, basically. It all starts and ends with us.
It does. Wow, there's so much in that. That's what an amazing story. And all that has resulted in thriving, which is amazing. There's just so much in there, like talking about just the ability to adapt and to change, and how we must always do that as humans. Like what we initially think our first goal was, and understanding and accepting the fact that if you find a different motivation in life during that journey, And that doesn't mean where you started was wrong. It just means that you've got to a different place and then you just keep going from there. And unless you do that, like if you just stay stuck and say you meet a crossroads, for instance, and you decide to never go straight on left or right because you're just at a crossroads and you know you have to do something, but you refuse to, then you're just building up a wall in your life. And you're just going to go back to your initial goal. All you can do is turn around and go back down the road that you'd already trodden. I used to talk a hell of a lot about people. I haven't spoken about it in a long time, actually, in that like I build like a corridor of fitness for people, a corridor of fitness. And I talk about it in terms of their happiness or their confidence or anything like that. Like in fact, life is basically just a corridor and there's loads of doors on this corridor and you can open one and you can look what's behind Pandora's box, open it. And if you feel like that's not the right door for you, you can come back and walk further down the corridor and find a different door. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like it ties into that like sunken time philosophy, doesn't it? Like the more we're invested in something bad, the less likely we are to pull out of it just because we're worried about lost time. We're worried about what's changed. And I find it really interesting in that like you and I have a lot in common in terms of you've adapted, changed and kind of reinvented yourself. And as have I, like, you know, I used to be, I still am a professional actor, but it's not really ever my daily focus now. Into personal trainer. Before that, I ran theatre schools for children. Like, I've reinvented time and time again. And I'm much better for it time and time again. Otherwise, if I was still running my theatre schools, I'd be so unhappy and depressed. And I wouldn't be able to have phone calls with people like you, which really makes me just astounded. And I'm lucky in that I've always had that compass within me, but for someone who doesn't have that compass, it's a really scary thing to try and discover and to understand about yourself. So how do you go about delving into that? How do you go about just figuring that out and realizing that actually if your course was set to northwest and you need to set it to north, that it's okay to set it to north, even if it means you might lose money, you might lose time, you might lose respect of some of your friends, you might lose respect of your parents, all these things. How do you make sure that doing what is right for you is what you're meant to do?
So with the clients that I work with, so I will always bring them in and we will always spend time getting clear on what is their reality right now. Because a lot of people will live in denial, which the acronym for denial, which I love, which is don't even know I'm lying.
I love that.
Yeah. So, you know, bring them in and we get very clear because people are very good at pretending that things are okay and almost surrendering to that thing of, okay, well, this is just the way that it is. And so, you know, I'm just going to sit back and play like I'll just sit back and accept it, which is basically a form of self-sabotage. Because if you think that you don't deserve anymore or you can't have anymore, then you're basically sabotaging your life results if where you are right now is not making you truly happy. So I ask people all the questions and I ask them, you know, are you happy? Is your relationship making you happy? What is lighting you up? You know, so getting people very clear on where they are now and holding space for them to be really open and honest and know that it's okay whatever they say. This isn't about, you know, them. Many people fear being judged, so they will never truly like say, okay, this is where I am at. Especially when it comes down to family or people in your life, you know, if you want to grow as a person, then you have to realize that unless people in your life are going to grow with you, then people are going to fall off by the wayside. And that's okay. Like where people fall off, I always frame it as where people fall off the wayside is because they weren't meant to be in your life for any longer than they were. And when they have gone, you have then cleared up space for other people, other like-minded souls, other people on the same energy level where you want to be, people which are going to be there to support and lift you up and get you to where you want to be. That's what you're clearing up space for. So it does take a process of becoming okay with, I mean, I'm a recovering people pleaser. So I totally get the kind of, you know, the feeling, that awful need of never wanting to be rejected and feeling scared that if you actually say to someone, okay, I'm doing this for me because I want to feel good, that, you know, that they are going to reject you. But the fact of the matter is, if somebody isn't prepared to support you in what you want and helping you to feel good, the only reason that they are generally very objectionable to that is because you are mirroring to them something within themselves that they don't want to deal with, something that they don't want to face up to. So another thing that I always say to my clients is, you know, you're actually doing people a favor, because by you working on you and becoming the best version of you and feeling as good as you want to feel, you know, the people in your life that want to do that for themselves, yeah, they might bite back and they might be like, I don't like that she's changing, so I'm gonna go in and try and, like, you know, block her or make her feel bad about it. But as long as you keep true to what you want, you know, eventually, if they want to, they will look at you and go, okay, actually, yeah, she's starting to grow as a person, and that has now inspired me, and now I'm gonna start growing as a person, because what is the other option? I just stay where I am now and say, you know, and she is growing and looking amazing and feeling amazing and going out into the world and doing things, and I'm still down here. So, you know, you can actually be inspiration for people in your life. And when it comes to family, you know, we seem to all have, you know, we all have this thing where we feel that we have to always do things to please our family. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have to put ourselves first. And you can love your family from afar, and if they are not prepared to support you in what you want, then, you know, you have to decide whether you want to get to, you know, the deathbed and or your deathbed and be having this conversation where you're just like, well, I let everyone else hold me back. And I could have gone out and had a completely different life, but I decided to let my life be dictated by other sources, whether it be friends or family or other people in your life. So you have to take personal. It's no one else's responsibility to make you happy, to give you the life you want. No one's going to come in here and save you. You have to do this for yourself. You have to, like, you have to earn it. You know, we were all put here, and we all have the same. Deservedness, is that even a word?
Yeah, I think so. We'll go with it.
Deservedness. I mean, you know, we are all equal in terms of, you know, our enoughness to be on this planet and to have what we want. But we have to really step into the power of being intentional about, this is what I want, and I'm gonna have the awkward conversations. I'm gonna put the awkward boundaries in place, and I'm gonna make sure that I focus on me and feeling the best that I can.
Yes, absolutely. Family is really interesting, isn't it? Yeah. I saw a good post by Dr. Julie Smith. Mm-hmm. I think it was on TikTok or Instagram or whatever it was. She's wonderful, by the way. She said, look, just because someone is a family member, mm-hmm. that does not mean in any way, shape or form that you owe them anything, that you have to particularly like them, that you have that you owe them anything in your life. It just doesn't. You should probably have respect for them and stuff like that. But if they're not good for you to be around, then it's okay for you to step away from them.
Yeah,
and that's just incredibly important. And also, I noticed a massive difference in my life. Like, I lived at home for a lot of my life till I was, how old was I? I think I was 31 in the finish when I finally moved out with my fiance. Mm-hmm. And I noticed how much my relationship with my father improved once mm-hmm. I moved out. Mm-hmm. And I don't know in what way it improved. Like, I didn't have a bad relationship with him. But and I don't know whether he just respected me more, or whether just not being on top of each other meant a lot to us both or whatever. And I wouldn't, if he'd have asked me, I wouldn't have said I particularly needed that kind of space. But we just, our relationship just improved, like, dramatically so. And it was lovely. And And like, I wasn't hanging around for him. I was hanging around because I was poor, broke, and had no money, which is probably why he didn't like me. No, it's not true. He does like me. But it is interesting how when you make a big decision like that, like what your fears are may not ever come home to roost. I know this is true of a lot of LGBTQ, I get confused, people. And one of my good friends, one of my old clients actually, he started a podcast called Coming Out The Pod. And it was all about his coming out stories and other people's coming out stories. And he got quite famous people on it. And he the reason he started it was because he said, I remember being petrified about coming out. I was so scared of what everyone would say. I was so scared of what my parents would say, what my brother would say. His brother's like a really high up in the Navy and stuff. And he was like, I was just petrified, so petrified it paralyzed me. And I went, and then what happened when you did it? And he was like, well, nothing. They went, okay, pass us the potatoes. See you later. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, let's carry on with lunch. Stop hugging the limelight. Move on. And he wants to get that message out there to more people who have this kind of big thing in their closet that they're in, and really they don't need to be, because, you know, confronting something like that can really help you grow. And what's on the other side of these big decisions, if you know it's what's going to make you happy, then you're only making everyone else in your life unhappy by not taking that decision.
Yeah, 100%. And I think also kind of just on that same topic, fear is false evidence appearing real. And we all have been kind of conditioned, or, you know, we are in the mindset that all of our thoughts are true and that they are reality. So one of the big things I work on my clients with is getting them to separate, you know, what is real and what is just a thought, because the majority of your thoughts are not true, and you have to become empowered enough to manage your mind and to be aware of what it is that is going on in your head, so that you can hear and listen to the thoughts, because you can't control your thoughts, but you can always choose how you respond if you are able to decipher with yourself, okay, so this thought, is this an old thought, a new thought, where did it come from, is it true? You know, if I believe this thought, how does it make me feel? If I choose not to believe this thought, how does it make me feel? If I choose not to believe this, how do I respond? If I choose to believe it, how do I respond? So it's really just getting inside of your own head, coming off autopilot, and realizing, you know, you are more in control of you than a lot of people think you are. And it's really how you are responding to what is going on in your head that is, you know, what is playing out in your real world. And stories where, you know, that we make up about, you know, things that we have fears around, just get more and more dramatic, and they spiral and spiral and spiral. And that's what stops people taking action a lot of the time, because they become paralyzed by the level of stories going on in their head. But if you actually sit down, you know, I'm a writer, I'm a journaler. I believe it as a really strong tool for helping people to learn how to manage themselves better, because it gives you new perspective and gives you a different way to be able to look at the stuff that's going on in your head. My head, everyone's head, is a crazy, crazy place. And some of the stuff that I write during journaling, I'm like, geez, if that had stayed in my head, God knows what would have actually happened for the rest of this day. So yeah, it's incredible what you can do when you actually start questioning your thoughts and then stepping into the fire, stepping into the discomfort, and, you know, letting yourself grow as a person and coming out of the other side of it and actually positively impacting not only yourself but everyone in your life. So it's powerful.
It's really powerful. I always, when talking about that with people, I always use the example of, like, surely you've like had a knife in your hand before. You've walked down the road, for instance. Like, I use a really extreme example. And we've all had a knife in our hand. We've all looked at that knife and gone, I wonder what happened if I stabbed myself with this knife. Or we've all walked down the road and gone, what happened if I pushed that person out in front of a bus? Like, now, we've all had like a crazy thought like that, and it's And I mean, I know I've had them. I thought, bloody hell, Adam, what the hell are you thinking like that for? Like, how evil is that? And then I always think, like, you can't control thoughts that come in, but you can definitely control the thoughts that you let out. And you can definitely let them pass. And thoughts are just things. Mm-hmm. And that's all it is. And you should just let it float away on a bubble and go, well, that was a weird thought. And then move forward and never think on it again, ever. Because you do have that. I think a lot of people, what people aren't very good at in life, like whether in social media, in the friendships they keep, even in conversations they have, is self-filtering. They're not very good at self-filtering. They're not very good at filtering out when things are good or bad for them. And if they can tune into creating a better self-filter, then they're going to improve the way in which they build that kind of internal self-esteem by making sure they're controlling those thoughts. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So also body. So how does all this go into body confidence?
So for many years I was chasing what I thought was confidence. And I was chasing the feeling that you get when, you know, you see that number on the scale or you get into those small jeans and you're like, yeah, this is amazing. And you get that kind of like, woohoo, kind of life is good. But what I noticed was that it was very short-lived, and I would always end up back feeling like internally quite crappy. And what I realized over time is that it wasn't confidence that I was needing to work on, it was actually self-esteem. And so it was about really working on the relationship with myself and realizing that I have permission to, first of all, that I am not defined by my body, by my body fat levels, by what size jeans I'm wearing, by any number whatsoever. I'm defined by my experiences, who I am as a person, how I show up on a day-to-day basis. And this thing that I am in is, you know, it is part of me, but it is not kind of at my soul level who I am. And so I then had to start working on, you know, accepting that, you know, my body didn't need to, it wasn't going to change my life, basically. Whatever I did to my body, it was not going to bring in the results that I, it wasn't going to make me feel the way that I wanted to feel, because that's what we're all chasing. We're all chasing a feeling. So when somebody is saying, you know, if I could just get to X number on the scale or get into, you know, these size jeans, then I will be happy. Then I will, you know, I will get the partnership, the romantic partnership I want. Then I'll have the confidence to go for the job and all the rest of it. And that just isn't the case. You have all of that within you now. But the relationship with yourself, like your self-esteem, has become so disconnected, and you don't believe that because of life conditioning from kind of childhood. You have built up this story around yourself that you are literally just kind of your body and external things are the things that are going to make you feel better. And so it was only when I started to move into this, like, okay, I can accept myself for all my quirks and quips, and I, you know, my body is amazing and beautiful and, you know, strong and lets me do so freaking much on a day-to-day basis, no matter what size it is at, no matter, you know, what bloody size jeans I'm in. That's not the thing that is going to help me feel the good, like feel like I want to feel. That is a state of mind. And so when you work on, you know, changing the perspective of how you view yourself, and you work on like, basically, I wouldn't even say in the initial stages it's not about working on self-love, it's working on about self-acceptance and accepting that you are enough and you are beautiful and you are capable and you are everything that you ever need to be right now in whatever size your body is at. And when you, you know, when I'm working with clients and then, you know, they come to me and it's a weight loss goal, you know, the weight loss for me is more of a side effect of working on building this internal relationship with self. Because when you have that and you're in the state of mind of I am more than my body, then, you know, you will show up every day and you will choose to do things for your body that make it feel good because you respect your body. And when you are treating your body in a respectful way, you become, because your state of mind is so good, you become less and less and less concerned about what freaking number is showing up on the scale. And you really do start to move into being a different version of yourself, because your state of mind has changed. You are no longer thinking that your whole life happiness and your whole life fulfillment is dependent on this being a certain number or a certain size, or whether you do or do not have cellulite, or whether you do or do not have, like, the word that I hate most in the world, bingo wings, or whatever the other terms are that get, you know,
the roll of fat.
Yeah,
that's what the muffin top.
Yeah, and all of that crap. It drives me insane. Stop talking about your body in that way. Like, your body that you're in now does so freaking much for you, and, you know, it just, yeah. So it's about a state of mind, basically, and, you know, stopping insulting your body. I mean, I do. The best friend tactic with I use myself and with my clients, or the little girl tactic, which is just anything that you wouldn't say to your best friend, or anything you wouldn't say to your little girl self regarding your body, then you don't say to yourself as an adult. Because when you're looking at the little girl self, like I do inner child work with my clients as well, and we all have an inner child within us. And if you are walking through your day prodding and poking at your, you know, in air quotes, muffin top, and pulling at your bingo wings and going, I'm such an unworthy human being just because I have, you know, some body fat, then every time you do that, that little girl that's inside of you, you are hurting her feelings, because you're basically telling her that she, you know, as she is not good enough, and that there's something wrong with her for having, you know, this, you know, some body fat and, you know, jiggles and on all of the things. So yeah, it's such a, I think when I managed to step away from the numbers and the, you know, being obsessed with them, because I was very obsessed with them, they ruled my life. It was one of the most freeing things I think I've ever done. I stopped counting calories, I stopped weighing myself, I stopped all of it. And I was just like, whoa, this is like...
It's a whole life outside of numbers. Yeah, I mean, I've worked, like, recently I've done a lot of work on getting clients to weigh themselves every day.
Mm-hmm.
And like, in terms of keeping themselves accountable to that weight loss goal and things like that. And it's, I do find in my life, in my training, in the way I work with clients as well, I do find it really hard sometimes to find a congruence between all what you're talking about, which is something I value greatly and something that I try and put a big onus on. Mm-hmm. And also the thing that the clients are very concerned with as well, and dealing with weight loss and losing weight and all of those things as well. Like, mm-hmm. I still keep trying to bridge the gap for them all the time between the two things. Like, you can find weight loss through all of that self mental health and all of that work, all of that self-development, inner child and everything else, and loving yourself and freeing yourself from the numbers. But then, you know, there's also people who have that goal in mind all the time, and it is dominating their lives. I think sometimes it's good to expose someone to it, so they can then, when they do have to step off of it, they find a new freedom again, or they can find a balance within it. It's something in my head that I'm still trying to figure out, as you can probably tell the way I'm phrasing all what I'm saying right now. It's finding that balance between the two. Like, you have to balance the balance, and it's really important. And whenever someone comes at me hammering weight loss all the time, I will spend, in fact, to be fair, a lot of the time, I will move them just away from thinking about it and try and get them onto, you know, that self-love and that just respecting yourself and eating in a way that you would love yourself, and trying to find your gorgeous self almost, you know?
Yeah.
It's really hard though, because society stops us from ever being allowed to think that's acceptable.
Yeah, but then you have to then take ownership of yourself in that situation, because yes, there is societal pressure in our world around us, but then, you know, it's about kind of editing what it is that you are looking at. And so, you know, for example, just something as simple as, you know, going into Instagram and detoxing, you know, all of the accounts that don't make you feel good, all of the accounts that presenting, you know, the perfect body image, or hammering home, you know, numbers and this, this, and this, and just making sure that what you are taking in, how you create, you know, curate your influences in your life, they need to be ones that are making, you know, that are inspiring you and making you feel good. And, you know, so it's about, yes, there is societal pressure about, but it's about stepping away from it and going, okay, so again, it comes back down to really getting clear on what is the vision you have for yourself beyond the numbers. And really getting people to tune into what is the feeling that you are chasing. So yes, you've got a weight loss goal, and it's a very valid goal, you know, you can do what you want with your body, but what is beyond that? What is the feeling that you are looking for? Because, you know, going back a few years, I would have clients that would come and we'd work on, you know, fat loss, and they would get down to where they wanted to be. And I mean, same with myself, and they still weren't getting the feeling. And so the problem with focusing solely on the numbers and being obsessed with the numbers is that very often people get a very huge expectation hangover when they reach their goal, and for them as much as they thought that they were going to, because there was too much focus on the number and not enough focus
on the self
and the feeling. But I, you know, I understand 100% where you're coming from. It's difficult, and it is a bridge that needs to be gapped, and and, you know, I'm sure with many of the clients that you work with, as with me, they, you know, they've come from being, you know, the kind of slimming world Weight Watchers side of the industry, which is like, you weigh in weekly and we will
celebrate
you if you have won, and we will, you know, whatever, if you have not, you know, just trashing people's belief in themselves, basically, and making everything about an obligatory number, which actually, if you look at the body, I say this to my clients all the time, I'm like, you know, yes, if you get on the scale and it says you are, say, 2 pounds up, if you actually looked at yourself in the mirror between you being 2 pounds up and you not being 2 pounds up, you wouldn't
see a difference.
Yeah. You wouldn't, but it's the emotional attachment to that number. So it's a big thing of like getting clear with people on what does that number actually mean to you? How much of your life, happiness and attachment have you got, like, you know, invested in that number? And do you need to shift the focus and invest in other things and invest in, you know, focusing on how you are feeling?
It's hard, isn't it? Because so many people do believe that that number will make them happy. And they will sit there and they will stare you blind, like, they've not screamed at me in my face, but they have told me consistently, one of my clients for 2 years, that number will make her happy when she gets there. And I stand there, I go, it won't. And she's like, no, it will. I'm like, no, it won't. And I know it won't. You know it won't. But getting someone to believe that the number isn't the issue, and that we need to direct you into other ways. Like, I'm always happy to help her conquer the number. Like, I'm always happy to get her to work on it. But it's like, we push on that bit, and then we have to push on everything else for a good period of time. And then we push again, and it's constantly balancing what it is she wants and what she needs. And it is interesting, because when something goes slightly wrong in her life, then everything's gone wrong, and it's just so hard to find to get that message to people and get them to believe it.
Yeah. I mean, have you, I'm sure you have asked her, but like, what is her expectation when she gets to this number? And like, what is her sabotaging tendency? Like, what is it in her life that then, what's her glass ceiling basically on, you know, where she gets to a point and then goes back to the familiar?
It's for her, it's constant lack of belief in herself, constant stress, constant never ever ever, and it's also a belief of, like, I think truly it's a belief of unworthiness.
Mm-hmm.
Which is horrible, because like, she's an incredible human being and resilience galore, strength like, you know, I've never seen in the gym before. Like, the strength is unreal, and there's so much to be celebrated, and it's just so hard to get some people to see that sometimes.
I mean, unworthiness is at the root of, you know, majority of people that are chasing numbers, and not even just numbers, people in general, their glass ceiling will always be, well, I'm only worth this much. So she believes that she's only worth a certain level of success in this area of her life. So she just keeps floating up, bashing her head on the glass ceiling, and then, you know, ending up back at square one.
Yeah, I think she feels like she's only, I think she feels like she is at her maximum peak of success across her entire life, across like every aspect of life, finance, relationship, confidence, fitness. And like her career and everything. I think she thinks that's it, she's there. And now she's stuck here forever for the next 30 years until she retires. And it's a very, I mean, I personally, I couldn't imagine having that feeling with you every day. Like, I can't empathize enough to kind of comprehend what that must feel like, you know?
Well, I think, I think I can definitely relate to that, because I think that's where I was for a long time. I was just like, okay, this is it. I guess this is just what my life is going to be. It will take her to decide that, and as it took me to decide, that actually this low level kind of feeling dissatisfied all of the time, there has to be more to life than this. And for her to reach that level of being, okay, I want to see if there's more for me. I know that there's more for me. The lighting that internal fire of not sitting back. It's amazing. But hopefully she will, you know, come to that conclusion. Because obviously we can be there to, you know, support and empower, but people have to want that for themselves in the first place. I'm curious.
That's the real hardest bit, isn't it? It's getting them to believe that they have the power within themselves.
Mm. Yeah, 100%.
Why Queen Bee?
Queen Bee. Oh my god, I haven't used Queen Bee for.
It's on your side. It's behind you in your light box.
Oh, on my light box. Ah, Queen Bee. So for a while, I've played around with my branding quite a bit.
Right. Okay.
For a while, part of my brand was I was like, yeah, I've become like Queen Bee of my life, and then I just decided it didn't quite, because the queen, I didn't really like that. For me, it just felt a bit like, you know, that's not quite fully descriptive. But I just like I just still quite like it as a kind of, yeah, when I walk in the kitchen, I'm like, yeah, I'm Queen Bee of my, you know.
Of my little yard.
But maybe I should change it to, that's not going to fit on there, though. It's also to do with space on the
box.
Five might fit in.
You can get Thrive in there. I've got Faith.
Yeah, Faith. Queen Bee was another thing. I had all these little quirky Queen Bee logos and things that I'd had done. And I look back at them now and I'm like, Yeah, because the thing is, at the end of the day, I'm 42, and there's kind of, I felt like that bit of my branding I kind of grew out of. And not to say that, you know, when you're 42 that you can't have things, you know, fun and whatever, but I was just like, no, I've moved into a different
space
of my life. I'm venturing down the path of like going insanely woo-woo with kind of myself, my own spirituality, and, you know, clairvoyancy and all sorts of things going on. So I was just like, Queen Bee doesn't quite sit. I need something a bit more mellow and kind of like, you know, see myself sitting on a cloud.
I like that, like unicorns and rainbows, why not?
Yeah, thrive rainbow, like over my...
Yeah, too right.
Like, yeah, I'm a spiritual mama.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that fits you much better, especially with your accent too. We haven't got into accents, have we? We're gonna have an accent.
Oh my god. But this is unfair, because what? I was unaware of your like years of
acting. Yeah, but one thing you're not aware of is I'm really bad at accents.
Okay, what's your so if you were going into like an audition or something, right. And what would be the accent that you would choose to present to said auditioning people?
Well, do you want to know one of the most depressing facts about the accent industry?
Come on.
It is the fact that they only ever hire you to be you.
Interesting.
So they never, like, you spend years and years and years at drama school learning how to be Hamlet and Romeo and Benvolio or Cassio, Iago, Othello. And, you know, you spend years learning all these Russian techniques to transform your physical and metaphysical self. And then you get into a commercial and they're like, yeah, you look like a 6'4" Essex boy. Let's go. It's like, great, thanks. I remember sitting in one of the first auditions I ever got was for an army commercial. I was in FHM, right, on this army commercial. It was on a TV, ITV commercial. It hit billboards around the UK, and it hit like FM, FHM. What was the other one? Zoo and...
Oh my God, nuts.
Yeah, what, nuts, that's it. I was in the metro, all these things, right? And I remember sitting there in this audition room, and I sat there, and there was a guy from the year above me at drama school who I never got on well with. I didn't like him at all. And he walked in through the door, and I was so angry. And I was in this room, there was about 40 people in this room, all just sat on a chair waiting for their name or number to be called. And I sat there, I was like, I just feel like I'm in a, like I'm a herd of cattle. Like, I just feel like I'm at a cattle market. This is ridiculous. And I remember getting really frigging angry. And I was like, I cannot believe, and it's all because this guy from the year above me showed up. And I was like, I cannot believe my agent has sent me to this, where I've spent 3 years at drama school, and they're literally like, I'm in a room full of Adam Berries. It's ridiculous. And I was so mad, and I went into the audition. And I just sat down and pretended to drive this forklift that you was meant to in the audition and that. And I walked out and I was like, I just went, bye, see you later. I got out as quick as I can. Like, not to the director, but to the guy from the year above me. And just had a really bad feeling all day. And then about, I don't know, maybe a week later, I get a call from my agent going, so they want you to do that commercial and it's worth a hell of a lot of money. And I was like, are you kidding me? I was so angry that day. He was like, it's amazing. The ones you don't think you're going to get, you get. It was great. And it was a funny feeling. But yeah, they don't, like, I've never had to play. I played a Yank. I played an American soldier. But you just get hired to be you. So when I was leaving drama school, everyone always said to me, I was basically a younger version of Nicholas Lyndhurst, which basically meant I'm Rodney. So that's who I am. I'm Rodney.
If your listeners know, I don't know where the majority of your listeners are. Well, they know who Rodney is. If you don't
Maybe
know.
Not from Only Fools and Horses. Yeah, they might not. A lot of them are in the USA, actually, my listeners.
If you are in the USA and you do not know who Rodney from Fools and Horses, you need to YouTube that and just have a look, because it'll be comedy gold.
Yeah. And then you'll just listen to this and think, you plonker, Adam.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Yeah. You're from Hull, aren't you?
I am originally. So yeah, I've got my accent is, I always think that the southern accent, so kind of your accent,
it's a real English accent.
It's a bit more neutral. Well, I suppose like the counties like Bedfordshire, Hampshire, that's very, very neutral. London
and English.
I mean, I can't really do any accents.
That's not bad.
I don't really know what that is, though.
Like Queen's English, right?
Queen's English. Yeah, I can pronounce my word. Where I'm from, Hull, we don't do vowels very well. So, no.
Do vowels very well, sir. There you go, sir. All the time. Cut them off. It's weird.
Weird accent.
Well, when I first heard it, I was like, I just couldn't pick it. I wasn't sure if it was Geordie, but I knew it wasn't Geordie, but I couldn't tell where it was. But it's interesting, it's all on, it's northeast England, isn't it? I went too far away.
No, you did well. I remember being in the States years ago and got asked whether I had Russian and Australian.
Yeah. The Americans always confuse English accent for Australian.
Yeah,
and I mean, I'm moving to Australia soon, so I'm going to stick out like a sore thumb. I keep telling my fiance, who's out there at the minute, I keep telling her, I'm going to teach your country to speak English properly because it does my head in.
Oh my God, that's live. They've just gone back down into lockdown. I've got one of my clients, she's in
Melbourne.
And they've just gone back into lockdown, haven't they?
Yeah, my fiance is up in Queensland, so miles away. You can fit the whole of Europe into Australia. It's a massive place.
I'm just waiting for them to lift the travel. I travel a lot. Like, I go to the States a lot.
Oh, right, okay.
And so I'm just like, will you just open the airports? Come on, Mr. Trump. Let's open these borders. Let's get things going.
What do you do in America?
So I am my business partner. I don't know whether she's Sam Altieri, Salty Lifts.
Okay, all right, yeah.
Yeah, so I spend a lot of time in the States because I love it, first of all. And obviously, I'm an online, my business is all online, so I have the freedom to travel. So I will go and sometimes just spend time just out there creating and all kinds of things. But also, she is over there, Marcy's over there, so I've got like quite a few friends spotted all over the place. I'm dating a guy in New York, so everything is stateside, and one of my dreams as a
East Coast,
child,
West Coast.
Yeah, one of my dreams as a child was, one of the things I've been working on manifesting is having this life where I'm kind of able to have UK and also the States, because I've always had a kind of a tie to it. So that's kind of what I've managed to create. So it's kind of
interesting, because when I was younger, I always had this inclination that I was American.
Yeah, weird.
I don't know what it was. I just always wanted to be American. Like, even to the point people would ask me, I'd be like, yeah, I'm half American. Like, my dad's American, or like my granddad was American. I'd just be like, I'd make it up. Just because I really, really wanted to be American, because they're so cool. And now it turns out my kids will be Australian, and I'm going to be a live alone Aussie. But I could think of worse places to be.
Yeah, 100%. So when are you getting married?
Hopefully next year, October 2021. Hopefully, but it's all still a bit up in the air and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah,
we'll see. It's going to be good.
Oh my God, that's so exciting! So you do an Australian accent, man.
I can.
Go on, then.
Hit me. Dance, monkey, dance.
No, let's do this.
Well, the Aussie accent, they always go up at the end quite a lot, so you have to talk a bit like that. And everything sounds a bit like a question.
Yes, it
does. If it is a question or it's not a question. So that's how you kind of get into the accent. And then you can just play around with it a little bit more. So you can open up the vowel sounds a little bit, and it can sound a bit more countryfied. Or you can just get it all a bit more staccato, and it sounds a bit like that. And I was on the phone to an Australian the other day, and we was talking about sea freight, and he just said, "Oh, don't worry, mate. The sea freight options will prices will never change, mate. It's sea freight. They say mate a lot, and if they call you a mate, it means that you're basically a friend, and they're just a really nice bunch of people."
That's amazing. I think you nailed that. I think you can move there and fit right in with the locals.
It's You know, that when I was at drama school, there was a whole swathe of things that was related to our language and how to blend in as humans in our society. Mm-hmm. We blend in and we adopt each other's language as much as we can.
Yeah.
And it is interesting. I'm sure you must notice it when you spend a long time in Australia. You start phrasing the same way they phrase. You start saying words that they say that you'd never say in the UK. Yeah. Like my fiance always asks, like, if she says, "Are you keen? Like, do you want to do it?" But they'll just use the word "keen" because in Australia they shorten everything. If it takes English 4 words to say something, they'll find a word and put an O on the end of it, and that's it, right? And so they just go, "You're keen?" You're like, "Well, what does that mean? Am I keen? I'm always keen. I've got loads of energy. What do you want from me?" And they're like, "No, no. Do you want to go and do it?" I'm like, "Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. Let's go." So it's like that. What I find is you blend yourself in like that. And when I was out there for 6 weeks last year, I was talking pretty Aussie, to be honest. Just the phraseology and the way it goes. And it doesn't take me long. And I'm very malleable like that because I have a really good ear.
Yeah.
Like, I love listening to the way people sound. I love listening to the way people talk. And I can just slip in to what I need to when I need to. It's really handy. Like, if you met me in America, you'd probably think I was a Yank. And all the Yanks would probably think I'm just taking the piss out of them. But it is really interesting. But then, like, and I mean, coming full circle in terms of what we do and stuff, it's, you do almost have to teach people a dialect. You do almost have to teach people a completely different way of talking to themselves. I put a post up the other day that was like, you can work on fitness, that's fine, but a calorie deficit or whatever, dieting, losing weight, whatever it is, fitness, whatever, will be so much easier if you, it's not enough to just be in a calorie deficit. You have to study it. You have to think about it. You have to learn about it. You have to educate yourself around it. You have to really push yourself into the world that you're spending money and willing to invest a fair amount of your time in.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, you're going to get so much more out of it. And, you know, all my clients, I try and coach them on talking like they're almost like they're me. Like, talk about your calories, talk about your education in the subject, talk about the way your body lifts, talk about the way things feel, ask me questions about it, learn about it and all of this, because that's going to empower you and educate you to move so much further forward. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the same. So if someone is listening to this and they're kind of struggling a bit or whatever, think about, are you phrasing yourself like you're someone who is doing fitness at the moment, if it's a keen focus in your life? Are you someone who is working on their interior self? Do you talk about yourself in that way? And when we say things like positive self-talk, that's what we mean. We don't mean, oh, just say, "Oh, look, I'm a happy bird all the damn day." We mean use terms that align with your life. Use terms that align with your goals. Use terms that mean that you're moving forward in the correct way, that you want to be moving forward. And that's what positive self-talk is. It's not just going, "Oh, no, I am." I mean, saying things like, "I am worthy," "I am genuine," I do have this value is important. But saying it without believing it can be as detrimental as not saying it at all. So, you know, just push yourself, talk and talk about the things that you like to operate in and exist in and you're trying to learn about. And that will help you reinforce things.
Well said, my friend. The power of language is real. People don't realize how powerful. So yeah, what you say to yourself matters.
Indeed. And Shakespeare believed that as well. Shakespeare knew that the human exists in the language he speaks.
Yeah, smart guy, that dude.
He was, wasn't he? Right, we better call it a day, I suppose. What a lovely chat it's been. Well, wait, before I forget, yeah, tell everyone how they can find out more about you.
My main kind of social platform would be Instagram, which is Thrive. I forgot my own name then. Thrive with Joss is my handle. Or my website is www.thrivewithjoss.com. And I also have my own podcast, which is The Real You Podcast with me, available on all normal podcasting platforms. And they would be the best places to find me. Come and ask questions, reach out, whatever you want.
Perfect. How wonderful. From the bottom of my heart, Sarah, it's been amazing. I've loved chatting with you. I've loved connecting with you. I've loved following you. And it's been an absolute joy. So I'm sure my listeners will feel exactly the same. And I'm sure they're as grateful for your time this morning as I am. So thank you so much, and thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, and hopefully, I hope you have a wonderful day.
Thank you. You too.
Awesome.
Bye.
Bye. I really, really, really hope you enjoyed this episode with Sarah. Please go and follow her on Instagram. She's a wonderful person to have in your feed. She's always spreading positivity and joy. And she's just a fantastic energy to have on your phone and in your life. So please go and follow her. And thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being a part of the Fitness Solution. As I mentioned before, if you want to join the Fitness Collective, start taking your fitness goals seriously. Start moving forward in a very holistic way. Join my coaching program. It's called the Fitness Collective. Head off to www.thegymstarter.com. Follow the links on there, and then I'll be in touch. That's what you got to do. Other than that, just keep enjoying the podcasts. Share it with a friend if you enjoyed it. Do all the things. And thank you so much for being here. You do not know how much I appreciate it. Peace, love, and protein. High fives and positive vibes. Ciao.